Mr. Marley?
Here.
Mr. Brady?
Here.
Mr. Bartlett?
Here.
Mr. Stanley? Dr. Angel? Dr. Angel?
Come back to
him. He's muted. I could see him. Can we say that for the record? He is there, but he's muted.
Unfortunately, no, he would have to be able to, because we don't know if he can hear us, and he can't take part in the meeting unless he can interact with committee members.
Okay, we'll give Alejandro, can you hear us? I can see the little muted symbol.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll
come back.
Mr. Fondren? Mr. Leeds?
Present.
Okay, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Can we message Alejandro and see if he's letting know that?
Do you have to send that?
It's just in the
Right. I was having sound issues. Can everybody hear me?
Yes. Dan, can you indicate that you're here so that we can add
Yes, I'm here. Alejandro Angel. Sorry, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You weren't official until you said here. All right. Call to the public. Members of the public may address the committee during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARF 38-431.01H, the committee members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here that wishes to make comments to the committee at this time?
No one from the public has indicated that they wish to appear.
Okay, thank you. No. Hearing no one signing up, we will move on to adoption of the minutes. Review, consideration, and possible action for the September 20th, 2021 L&R committee meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
I'll second.
Second.
Peter.
A motion and a second to approve. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Hearing none. Motion passes. Review, discussion, and possible action on the following. Board statutes for possible future legislation, board rules for a possible future rule package, and board substantive policy statements, possible updates, or rescind. We'll start with agenda item 5A, board statutes for possible future legislation.
So there's some changes from last time, but just wanted to quick review and maybe hear some other opinions. And I'm going to share my screen just a second here. Okay. So most of this is what we had before. This here, so staff was sitting down and we were still going over some of the issues that we see when we're coming in with applications and other things. So before staff, of course, we sat down and started discussing all these statutes again and with legal counsel present and things like that. So other little things that maybe weren't thought of at the last L&R committee were brought up in these discussions, and I wanted to present them to you guys. One of the changes is engineer to actually have the definition as opposed to professional and scratching professional out, because that would be consistent with the other definitions. So that's what you see there. Is there any questions about that change where all the blue here was taken from the professional engineer definition, scratched out engineer, put in the professional engineer. It's now consistent with the other professions, and then professional engineer was just scratched out.
Kurt, did you say you read the definition of professional engineer?
Yeah, let me go down to that to show you what occurred. Yeah, so professional engineer is the exact word for word taken from here. This was put stricken as no other profession has two definitions. There's no land surveyor, professional land surveyor. There's no doubles in anything. And this would be more that consistency in putting the heavier definition under engineer.
But I guess my question is, and I don't know, I don't remember what we decided to do last time, but we've learned that engineer is not a term that we can enforce or a title we can enforce from, you know, prior issues with different states, and we were looking to regulate the practice of professional engineering. Is that not an issue? I mean, that we're just going back to engineer?
I think what we had discussed with staff and legal counsel is that all of these different words are actually used within our statutes, engineer, the professional engineer, and so forth, and honestly, we don't know what the repercussions would be just making that change where we added certified or professional certified or whatever to all of these definitions.
Because you, thank you, Kurt. You know, Alejandra, this is Judith. So, it's on the table for discussion. I mean, I think none of us are exactly sure if that is the best thing to do. And we've had a lot of debates ourselves not being in any of these professions, but just in what I've learned, I lovingly say that the engineers are just, they're difficult because there's so much to that, and there's so many that are not registered. That it's different from architects. To me, I say an architect or landscape architect, and nobody's debating whether that's, you need another designation or something. There aren't, from what I can understand, you know what I mean, like more people saying they're using that term that aren't professionals. You know what I mean? It's just engineers, it gets really convoluted. And so,
I know. I understand, I think, what you're saying, Judith. I guess my concern is that we know there will be people who call themselves engineers. Some may be, you know, trying to tell people that they're professional engineers, but others maybe they're just, you know, train engineers, fire engineers, other stuff. And I don't know that we can just work with our statutes. Might put us in a bad spot if we're defining engineer and not professional engineer.
This is Ed Marley, and I'm kind of tending to agree with Dr. Angel. There's a lot, and we're seeing it creep into architecture too. I mean, you know, so and so is the architect of this, and there's systems architecture for computers, and so we're seeing a little of that creep as well. I'm not quite as worried about it because I think people, it's easy to bifurcate the built environment architect from the software architect,
right?
Pretty easily. But when it comes to engineering, we have contractors that have staff that have project engineers. They may not have an engineering background, and I don't know why they call them project engineers, but they do. They're not practicing engineering. My radar's never gone up on that as, ooh, this is a violation of board statutes to call them
definition.
A project engineer, because they're not doing engineering as defined in our statutes. And you have railroad engineers, and you know, there's just a lot of engineers. And so to scale this back, if we use just simply the term engineer, I'm concerned that now we are putting some of those folks who technically aren't practicing engineering in potential violation of our statute. Because now, if they're a project engineer working for the contractor and they're orchestrating schedules and subcontractors and pulling all this together to help get a building built. They're related to the built environment. But what they're doing doesn't fall into this definition. I'm just a little concerned about that. So I kind of like having a professional.
Throw out something crazy here. You can throw your pen at me if you want. But so for consistency in our statute, what would it look like to say flip them all, professional geologist, professional architect, professional,
I think our discussions was, we decided
we're looking at the model.
Well, the use of the term just landscape architect is used throughout the statutes, and changing that specifically to professional or the registered, whatever, might have consequences unless we kind of just scour
and
comb through
everything.
But
we're taking it off one, but not, I don't know. I'm just trying to be consistent.
Well, you're going to see some comments from me further on in our discussion about consistency and what we're calling some of the exams and things like that. So I think this is our opportunity. If we need to really scrub our statutes to make sure everything flows consistently through it, this is the time to do that.
And I want to jump ahead, but I know with geology, I know the exams and the terms, there's a lot of inconsistencies there too.
I think we already, in a lot of these our registration stamp, our stamp for architects says registered architect is required to be in. Look at the sample seal, it's got registered architect.
So how does it get registered architect versus professional architect, or not registered engineer, professional engineer?
It's been like that for a very, very long time. The beginning, and I think it's just something that's, no one's messed with it. So
Ed, nationally, is there more consistency?
I think on the architect side, it tends to be more registered architect. And a lot of folks use, if they're not a member of the AIA or something else, they'll put RA after their name. I think I've seen landscape architects either do RLA or PLA. They kind of pick and choose.
With landscape architects, there are some states that registered has a different connotation than
professional.
And that's why probably about 5 or 6 years ago, CLARB changed and ASLA changed to PLA, professional landscape architect. But talking about engineers, within the Department of Transportation, you don't have any that you are allowed to use just engineer after their name. It's always professional engineer. And positions and the whole hierarchy within the department and in relation with the contractors is professional engineer. Now, contractors have a lot of people that are, they call themselves engineers, but they don't call themselves PE.
Right. Yeah.
Would it be maybe the consensus to leave professional engineer as is, revert engineer to its original definition? Stay with that right now.
That'd be my initial inclination, Kurt, is that unless we have, maybe if the AG gives us advice or if somebody else explains why that would be a good idea, we'd explore it. But otherwise, I'd leave it at this. NCES has definitions for engineer and professional engineer. And I think they match almost exactly what we have.
I think so, too.
I'm very comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for geologists, just in Arizona, I'm a registered geologist. In California, I'm a professional geologist. Most states are professional geologists, but there's some that are registered. I mean, there's 1,000 people out there with stamps that go RG on them, so the last thing we're going to want to do is change that because of history.
I understand Mr. Fondren's trying to end the meeting and having difficulties. Can somebody, staff member, call him through the meeting? You do it through the meeting.
Oh, sorry.
So I don't want to jump ahead to your article about a respond engineering. I want you to know what the geology definition is. That's the model law is frightening.
I know, it's long.
Don't
blame me. I have.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I reached out to Asbox and I said, please, can you let me know, is this
what did they tell you?
Where did it come from? How did you come to this conclusion? Can you give me some
background? Well, too many cooks in the kitchen.
Unusually long compared to all the other associations. Yeah. But, you know, and Dina was very nice. She's like, oh, nobody's ever asked before. Let me take it to the board, you know. And so I haven't heard back yet. But I'm going to just say, I'll say it was distressing, I think, for us. Because, you know, to be candid here, geologists are... You're just a good group. You're well behaved. Get into a lot of trouble, and I don't think the definition that we have, which is much more concise, has been a problem. And I, as much as I want to go with model law with the associations, I am a little uneasy about this one because it's.
But
just
you're doing
like,
it to protect yourself, right? I mean, that's the idea behind these definitions, to make them consistent so that. Avoiding lawsuits or, I don't know.
Oh, I think that's just normal.
Sorry, can you take 30 seconds just to call Mr. Bond?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
sorry.
We are now calling him.
Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi, Mike. Welcome to the meeting.
Okay.
I kind of second Judith. I feel even though it's consistent to follow the model law, it's also inconsistent in how this model law looks compared to the other model laws. And I just fear that anybody that's on the committee will look at that laundry list and kind of second guess the whole package.
Yeah.
Well, and I think what further complicates the geology side of it is having the
trained
geologist.
Yeah.
Which we don't
know what trained geologist, if you loop it back to the geologist definition, may not fit. And so now we're building in a conflict in our statute because our definition of geologist conflicts with what it means to be a trained geologist.
Right.
We're using the same term.
Right.
So maybe staying with what we have for geologists is fine.
And we have no way of knowing about the trained geologist, like what's going on with that. Has it ever been utilized?
I don't even think it's ever been utilized.
I don't think
I've never even heard of a person anywhere that's claiming to be a trained geologist.
I ask everybody I can, and
right.
That's the response I get from, you know, but...
Right.
I guess try to strike it, but I don't know how that will go over.
Yeah. Any other opinions regarding this definition, whether you guys want to keep it or get rid of it?
Anyone else have thoughts on engineer versus professional engineer?
Are we talking about geologist?
The geologist.
The
engineer one. We're back to engineer. Okay, sorry.
Can I ask what page we're on?
Is it? Can you not see the share? Oh, because you got a call.
Because
I'm not in the packet. Because I'm not in a Word document, so I can change it. I'm not in the packet. So give me a second to look at the packet.
Well, you're doing engineering practice.
We're looking at the geology practice.
The definition.
It'll be PDF page 10.
Oh, thank you, Arlene.
Arlene, you keep track of this.
I will.
All right, thanks. I'll go back on mute.
So, Mike, what we were discussing is do we want the ASBOG definition of geological practice is very, very lengthy, and we're discussing should we just revert back to the definition we have in place.
I don't disagree with you. I see that's a lot of blue text in there.
And I think geologists in general wouldn't have a problem with the old definition.
My take is that I think consistency is great, but it's not necessary. I mean, if we haven't had any issues, maybe change it. Also, because if we go to the legislature or the board or anyone else, they're going to be asking a lot of questions, and it'd be nice to have lists of issues that we can clearly articulate what we're doing. It, not just, you know, it was the bill definition.
And that is where we struggled a little bit, just because we felt like it would be so easy to say, well, we're following model law from all of the associations, but at the same time, we really struggled, and none of us felt confident in leaving this particular model law language. So
maybe the way to explain it is we followed model law for four of the disciplines, the exception being geology, because we evaluated the model law definition of geology and felt that it would put us in conflict with the definition of trained geologists.
And leave out the part where that's kind of ridiculous anyway, and
down to its essence. This is really the concern. We're concerned that it's going to be in conflict with the definition of trained geologist. Leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Well, that's wonderful. I would feel better leaving it that way to present to the board.
It does just raise a lot of questions, like why in the world is geologic practice so complicated? Because it's not as complicated as it's phrasing to be.
Thank you, guys.
Part of that's because there's a long history of geology in this world.
Geologic history. It is longer than any other profession.
Thank you, guys.
So, Kurt, you're scratching all the blue.
Yep.
Going back to red. How about the furthermore paragraph at the end of all that blue? You're scratching that too, because that was added, wasn't it, to the definition?
It's still actually part of that model law. And I think technically it wasn't all the model law.
This is just another long list of sub-disciplines that I don't think is necessary.
I think it was a weird formatting thing when they went to a PDF that some of it was underlined, some of it was not.
Okay.
But it was all the same. So I don't think there's any other. We're going to 17 home inspection.
If we can take them in order. I started. I want to go back up. Under 12, this is some wordsmithing. Engineering training.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend under 12B, this applies to most of the disciplines that have in training designations, has passed the fundamentals of engineering examination. That's how it reads on the NCWS website. I think I have the same thing under geology, because that's how it reads on ASBOM's website.
Okay.
Fundamentals of geology examination. So if we can change that wording, that way, again, if we're adopting model law, now it's paralleling the, you know, NCWS or ASBOG's wording for how they term these exams.
Thank you, Ed. Yep, I like that.
Now we can go to 17.
This was brought up at the home inspection meeting last week, is we're finding that this language right here, residential building of four units or less, is kind of restrictive and maybe fairly old in light of high rises, condominiums, and things like that, where if a home inspector were to go to a high rise right now and do a home inspection of just a unit there, based on this definition, it's not technically a home inspection because it's four units or larger. And I would suspect that this was supposed to kind of make sure that a home inspection is of a residential dwelling and not of a commercial, but maybe over the last 20 plus years, the home market has gone far more into condominiums and things of that nature.
So why did we take out residential? Should it say components of a residential dwelling?
I actually just inserted, and Mike, you can't see it, but the AV ASHI, so the Association for Home Inspectors, had just updated their standards to kind of deal with this issue here. And this is the language they came up with. This is orange. And that these standards are applicable to completed buildings with residential dwelling units and their garages or carports. So something to that degree would probably be best to be thrown in here. So it's understood that no matter the size of the actual building or the number of units in that building, if you are doing a home inspection of a single unit, that's a home inspection.
I think we might need a definition.
Definition of dwelling could also be...
Or residential dwelling, because that's what we're looking at, residential dwellings.
Yeah, it could also be kicked back to the home inspectors that really kind of get into... I don't know if dwelling is used anywhere else in the statutes of the other professions.
I can't recall the wording, but we should refer back to our residential exemption portion of the statute just to see how that's worded. I don't remember. I know it has to do with like up to three units you don't need to register that. There's no area requirements, stipulations or anything like that. But I don't recall the actual wording there.
Don't recall us doing anything with home inspections that you never know.
No, it didn't deal with home inspections. It was more about what requires a registrant for engineering or architecture.
Mm-hmm. Well, in rule, there's a definition for detached single-family dwelling as used in the Act, and they talk about a single-family dwelling unit.
An exemption. This definition 17 does not use that definition of detached single family dwelling.
Yeah,
it just uses residential building with 4 units or less. The exemption, we'll just go down to 144. I think we have it in here. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Scrolling. It's right here. Non-registration is non-coaches or as is the following. That's why it's defined in 101, is because it's used here.
So dwelling is a good parallel word to use.
So right now, dwelling is not defined, but a detached single-family dwelling.
So that's not going to help with the home inspector thing, because condominiums would not be detached single-family dwellings, but
right.
Couldn't we have a separate definition of residential dwelling? Would that
if we really
cause
need
a problem?
Couldn't we, under 17, a dwelling per this section is defined as, and then it's very narrowly only on 17 and nowhere else in statute? Here's the question, Scott.
Isn't a residential dwelling redundant? I mean, what's the definition of just dwelling?
It matters where you look it up. I think the law definition would be it's somewhere is like a home, and it has electricity, utilities, and so forth. But I think it just matters on the definition where you grab it from, which is why it could be interpreted different ways based on.
But none of them are talking about gas stations or anything. You know, they're dwelling. A dwelling is a habitat, a home, is it not?
It is, but we have to segregate. I assume we would have to segregate out like a mobile home. That's a dwelling.
Yeah, we include those.
You include those?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yet, we've had home inspectors create huge difficulties for us saying that doesn't count. And I said it meets everything under the home inspection guidelines. How does that not count?
It always has counted, so we just got to put them under the table.
I just think it's always a good idea to have a definition. If it's just dwelling... Okay, but if we're going to refer to it I really feel like it needs a definition.
And do we actually need to modify this section? Because I think, if I understand the concern correctly, is the fact that in multifamily buildings, we don't need to inspect common areas. But I think this section already says, including the controls normally operated by the owner.
We do need to modify.
Well,
okay.
I think the concern is the 4 units or less.
Yeah.
Because you could have a 200-unit condo project and somebody selling that condo and they want a home inspection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to further complicate things, and Peter, I'm relying on you because you're the expert. When you're doing an inspection on a condo unit, a lot of these are connected to a central plant. So you're evaluating, I understand, the AC system within that unit,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of those controls report back to a central brain that controls everything in the building. And
mm-hmm.
so,
and that, of course, would be out of the scope of the inspection.
Right.
Okay.
So as long as you guys know what to do, forgive my ignorance.
I'm just learning here.
So as long as you feel like there's controls in place that mm-hmm. keep the lanes where they need to be for
mm-hmm.
the home inspectors doing that individual dwelling unit versus
right.
something screwed up in the central plant and it's affecting that heating unit, you just raise a flag and go, there's something wrong and it's not
here.
It's not here.
Right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. We do have to depend on the home inspector to be smart enough to do that. Because if he gets caught up on the roof with the chiller, he's going to find himself in trouble. But you can't write all of that into rule. The including the controls normally operated by the owner is really the key to that.
That helps clarify it. I guess I'm comfortable with dwelling, and then maybe we have to write a definition of dwelling as a place where people live.
You want to bring that back maybe for next time?
That's real basic, but that's kind of what
it is basic.
I'm looking on, there's a lot to choose from under dwelling, so
the definition of house is so broad anymore. I mean, it's a condo, it's a townhouse, it's a single family dwelling, it's a duplex, it's an apartment that's been converted to a condo.
Right.
It's a tiny house that has wheels on it, but you can sell it.
Right.
And
it would apply, all of those.
Mobile home, any
mm-hmm.
of those.
They all apply.
They all apply. So I think, basically, it's a place where people live.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to get real complicated about the definition,
mm-hmm.
but I think having a definition of dwelling is probably not a bad idea.
Yep, that's the way Judith sees it.
Okay.
Thank you.
we can bring that back around in a home inspector back. It might not have to go in this one until we have that figured out.
Mm-hmm.
However way we want to do it.
Well,
I
said, I think we can make it really simple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to do it real quick right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just do it.
Yeah.
I already told you what I think the definition is.
Right, well,
that might be too simple.
I'll have to renumber things later, but let's just put it in here off the side.
A definition of dwelling is where people live.
Oxford Dictionary says a house, apartment, or other place of residence. So
there's some really ancient language in our statutes, in the exemptions, about storage of chattels and other terms like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some of that, I read the Oxford definition and go, well, that still doesn't talk about it being a place where people live.
Right.
And that's really what it's all about. It's for human habitation.
Right.
A place for human habitation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's got a little more legal sounding words in it.
Right.
Where people
live. Yeah, so what if we said a house, apartment, or other place of residence intended for habitation?
There are people that have been used.
Human habitation. I don't know.
We
need human.
Otherwise, Peter's going to be inspecting dog houses.
Well, you laughed.
Well, I was
I'm
in one last week.
That's what
well,
I said at the meeting. I said, if there's not something, sure shooting, if he says whatever, like a, or a structure, whatever, it's going to be somebody's shed in the backyard, and they're going to count that as a parallel inspection. I mean, it, there has to be some degree of clarity for people not to push the limits on everything.
Well, we have to look at it from two perspectives. We have to look at it from our regulated professionals who may try to bend the rules a little, mm-hmm. or a lot. And then we also have to look at it from the public that we protect and make sure we don't create any kind of confusion over, mm-hmm. over what our regulations say.
The intention of this definition is really to lay out exactly what can be home inspected.
Yes.
And so right now we feel like it's too narrow, and so it needs to be just someone's going to live
we,
in there.
We need that right now with the limitation on 4 units, that's the problem we're trying to solve.
Yes.
We need to get rid of the 4-unit limitation.
And why don't Arizona we list them all? Actually agreed with that too, so that was
I'm not sure we list them all, we missed something.
Well,
something out of the list.
Well, you could always catch the ones you missed with and anything similar.
Yeah, that I know.
I mean, there's not really that many.
Seems like it's
the definition I see here is a house, apartment, or other place of residence. I mean, that's pretty basic.
The problem with putting an apartment is. Apartment's almost a quasi-commercial structure. It's a place.
Well, it's the same as a condo nowadays. And it's generally owned by somebody, and you don't generally do a home inspection for the tenant, you do it for the owner.
Right.
So that would also apply.
But the owner owns the whole complex. I mean,
In general.
So they'll have mm-hmm. 300 units. Mm-hmm. Which, well, but it'll be a lot compared to just a single home. Which is typically what's in the scope of the home inspection for mm-hmm. sale or whatever.
Question. Mm-hmm. When you have somebody who owns an apartment complex and they have multiple units they want checked at once, is that a home inspector that's called up or somebody else to check all of them?
Well, they'll call a home inspector often enough. And mm-hmm. You'll need, if he's got 13 units, there'll be 13 reports.
Okay, so it still is a home inspector.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be something separate.
Well, it depends on how big the unit is. I mean, the smart home inspector might be out of his league and he has to say something, you know, or find himself in a lot of trouble. And then you're going to need, different engineers, you know, for the different things. You're going to need the structural engineer or the soils engineer or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But, or even the mechanical engineer, for if they're looking for the overall building itself, but the home inspector will take it unit by unit.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm. You can just, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to waste a lot of your time on dwelling. We can think about that a little bit more.
Okay.
But leave that maybe for now.
In
the place
of human habitation.
That's
fine. Let's use that as a placeholder and then
yeah.
we can hold that.
Okay.
Dwelling is a place of human habitation. And then we'll see if somebody's bound to come up with something better than what this architect.
Well, Webster must have come up with something better than that.
Anybody.
18 was just a quick question. Is it, and Peter, you can answer this real quick. Is it important that a home inspection report is about the components? Blah, 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 of a completed dwelling.
Yeah, if for it to be a home inspection, it has to be completed, so maybe that should be in the definition as well.
And yeah, Julie pointed out that's extremely important because mm-hmm. people
yes.
are trying to turn it.
Yeah, I mean, the home inspector can inspect and often does uncompleted projects. On the other hand, it's not a home inspection when he does that. It's an in-progress inspection or a pre-drywall inspection or whatever they want to call it. But a home inspection that we're going to be, what do we do here? Regulating has to be a completed project.
Yeah. If it's not completed, that falls under the governance of a building inspector, which is a whole different animal, and we will open a whole nother can of worms if we don't keep completed in there.
Very good.
Right.
I think anything with the other items.
I picked up on engineering, geology, and survey.
Right. We started to fiddle around with firms, so the first thing changes is definition of the principal. So I think board staff are discussing how we currently take in firm applications and who can be a principal. In 2018, the board had put out basically an opinion that, and maybe it was a committee, and I can't recall which now, but it was back in 2018 because we now have a process procedure with firm principals, that you didn't have, if you say your structural engineering services are offered by that firm, the principal does not have to be a structural engineer. It can be a registrant of any type as it reads. And so staff was wondering if the committee feels that that is still what we want it to be. Do we want a principal in that particular category to be the principal? You know, if you offer mechanical, you need to have a mechanical engineer as the principal. If it's mechanical, electrical, and structural, you need a principal of each of those fields to sign up on that firm. And with those changes, starts with what a principal is. First, definition number 28 here actually doesn't jive with firms, which says that it has to be a registrant. This says it could be an officer of a corporation, which is, doesn't work.
So here's my concern, because I actually commented on 32.141b, where it says additional principals are required for each offered professional service. There are a lot of very large, particularly engineering firms, where the principals, that, you know, you may have three principals in the firm that are mechanical engineers, let's say. Well, they also have an electrical engineer, and they're offering electrical engineering services, but that electrical engineer may not be a principal in the firm. And so if we're requiring that the principal has to be, that the principal has to be a registrant, and then we require that the principal, and that we need a principal for each offered professional service, that may not be achievable under some company structures. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it's a little confusing as far as principal for our sake. It's just the responsible part, like person in charge of our firm registration, not necessarily the principal of a firm.
No, I understand that. No, I'm understanding that, but what I'm saying is this, as defined, principal means a registrant designated by the firm as having full authority and responsible charge of the services. Then when you go back to firm registration, it says firm and branch principal shall be registered under this chapter in the discipline corresponding with the professional services the firm and branch offers or engages in. If the firm or branch offers or engages in more than one professional service, additional principals are required for each professional service. So if you take that definition of principal, tie it back to this definition, those additional principals have to be basically owners in the company. And they're not necessarily.
I don't see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see, because we took out officer. Okay. Maybe I'm reading it wrong.
And I didn't understand this bit, officer of the corporation.
Well, that's actually been in there for a long time, and I think the reason that was in statute for quite a while now is so that you had, and this is where the problem can come in, and I'll get to there in a minute, but you wanted to ensure that you had people knowledgeable about the industry that they were offering to practice in running the company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't happen all the time anymore. Mm-hmm. We've got firms in this town right here. You've got Gensler, you've got, you know, Skidmore, Owings & Merrill. You've got all these huge firms. They're publicly traded companies. Mm-hmm. They're not owned by registered. They're owned by the public. I can own stock in SOM if I want to. Doesn't mean I'm going to be their principal in charge. So I think it's, we probably do need to take it out. I think what we were seeing a trend maybe back in the 80s, 90s, when we didn't have as many mega firms, and maybe none of them were actually publicly traded, you saw a trend where a firm principal would pass away, and the spouse would inherit the ownership of the firm, and they were a non-registrant, and maybe knew nothing about running an architectural practice, for example. And so, who's your responsible person for you know, running the firm? So I'm more comfortable now taking that out. And actually, Dr. Angel, maybe you can fill in. You're part of a larger company.
So I don't know. Maybe this is going nowhere, but I actually like the way it was written already. But I think the problem that's more likely to happen is that we're going to have firms that we're going to put in a PE who just got licensed and say, oh, this is my principal, you know, responsible for civil engineering services. And, you know, I don't know, they're saying that they're in responsible charge and having full authority to commit services. And that's probably not true in some cases. So I think originally we just had someone who was an officer of the firm. And having officers of the corporation means that they can bind the company legally. So those people always have full authority and are responsible. I know we, or I assume we added, or is the registrant designated by the firm for flexibility when we didn't have that principal of the firm or officer of the firm. But I, just for guidance purposes, I sort of like still saying that it should be an officer of the firm or, you know, a registrant. What do you think?
I understand what you're saying, Dr. Angel, because it's, like you said, even if I'm the lead surveyor where I'm at here, my boss has the ultimate authority on that. I'm not a contractual individual. I make sure the product is correct to the best of my ability, but only my boss commits the company. So from that perspective, I see what you're saying.
And I know, Ed, we've had a few cases where it's, you know, they fail to pay cooperating professionals or collaborating professionals, and it gets to be a challenge when it's, you know, someone who just got their license versus actually an officer of the firm.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, but that's also a case. I know we've had some cases for failure to pay a collaborating professional, where it was a huge corporation. The consultant doesn't get paid, and the local person has no authority. They get dinged because they're the registrant on the firm registration card. They get dinged and they have zero check writing ability. They have no authority to write a check to cover that. And that, I've always felt like, okay, we have to uniformly apply the law, and so they get dinged, but I never felt that was really fair.
Wouldn't that be covered in full authority and responsible charge? If the person has no power, then he couldn't be the principal?
No, it's true. But
yeah. I think the issue is, for a firm, we're not looking for someone in technical responsible charge.
Right.
We're looking for someone in, you know, operational and financial responsible charge as well.
Because it's,
yeah, I have a question then, right? Because 141A is completely contradicting what you're saying. It's saying that you have to be a registrant to be
right,
the principal.
I think it should be a registrant.
I think it needs to be a registrant.
But it should be a registrant who has that ability as well to commit the firm.
So,
I mean, you want someone who's higher up to the extent possible. You may not get the president or the vice president, but someone who's... You want to encourage people to use registrants that are higher up in the firm, I think.
And maybe this addresses my concern is if we have, you know, there's a corporation with a local office here in Phoenix or in Tucson, maybe their registrant that's on the firm registration card doesn't live here. But they're the one that can write the check. Because 9 times out of 10, if it other aside from just not having your firm registration up to date or having firm registration, the enforcement cases we would see would be failure to pay a collaborating professional. Rarely saw firms getting brought before the board for much else. It is predominantly that issue. And the poorer person sitting in the chair at the end of the table was always somebody who had no authority to write a check, but they were on the firm registration card. And I think we need to come up with language, and maybe this addresses that, that says you've got to be in a position of authority and able to write those checks to take care of the issue. So you don't get that first, that 1 year registrant who, let's throw them to the wolves so that they get stuck.
Should we be changing in 28 the word individual to registrant? Means a registrant who is an officer of the corporation or a registrant designated by the firm?
If they're not a corporation, then what happens?
Right. That's giving you a
I don't
more.
Think we can do that.
No?
Because we've got corporations that are headed up by, they're completely run by non-registrants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I just need to know, what's the...
A lot of big ones.
What's the intention of firm registration? Like, just the general question, because that would help me guide as to what it should
be
doing.
I've asked that question myself. Because I'm licensed in 9 states, and some of them have firm registration and some don't. And other than the non-payment of a collaborating professional, I can't come up with any other real logistical reason why we, this statute's, when I say it's not that old, it's probably maybe 20 years.
I could have sworn when we had this discussion before, Melissa, they've had this been around since like the 50s or something.
No.
Where are we using the term principal in context?
141.
Yeah. 141A, or B, I'm sorry.
Well, because the one I have in here is the one I changed, so I don't have the clean version. I think we were, staff was updating that language because we were maybe taking that route that it was supposed to be, we want to know that this firm is, the service it's providing has a principal kind of attached to the services who's over, who's looking at that stuff. And it sounds like that's not, I don't know, is that what we not want?
I mean, my firm, my partner fills the responsible registrant on the firm card. We've got 8 principals. They all run their own projects. I run my own projects. Something happens. I take care of it. You know.
Why are there 8 principals?
Because we're in a transition plan. We have 8 stockholders who are considered principals in the firm.
For the purposes of the board, couldn't you just list one principal?
Well, so one is listed. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just saying, but we have 8. But all 8 of us run our own jobs. You know.
That's what I'm just trying
and
to
if anybody's about. Responsible, I'm the financial guy for the firm, if anybody's responsible to make sure our consultants get paid, it's not Phil, it's me. If they, and I'm not on the card, so if a consultant got mad at us because they didn't get paid on something and filed a complaint with the board, Phil's before the board, yeah, he's the president, but I'm the guy that... Next to the controller.
But Phil should take responsibility and, you know, deal with you for not paying them, right?
Yeah,
true. But I don't know. I don't have really strong feelings on sperm registration myself.
Well, that's the thing. It's either, again, I feel like we can either do away with it, or you have to be really giving some teeth so it actually does something other than ding people who don't.
So we have two issues generally with sperm registration. One is failure to register, right? If we did away with sperm registration, that wouldn't be a problem, right? That's the problem with self-inflicted, I think. The second reason is the failure to pay collaborating professionals. And I guess we do have a remedy for that by getting one of the registrants who's in the firm card and disciplining them. But owner or companies could also pursue civil action against people to collect that money.
Yep.
So that it's not like there's no other options for people to get paid.
Well, and quite honestly, I don't think we're closing the door on board action to that, because if, Alejandro, if you were working for me and I didn't pay you, you could file a complaint with this board that Ed Marley didn't pay you.
And under what statute?
A responsible charge of the project that you and I were working on.
I know I just jumped in, but that's the good old days, and it was common for not to get paid. Once this went into board, it got paid. People have been getting paid.
Most of the time.
I mean, and now you even get people who haven't been getting paid, and as soon as they get brought up for the board, the people that aren't paying them goes in there and cries on their shoulder, and they come back and say, "I want to withdraw my complaint." You know, that happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
I think we should leave it in.
Yeah, I don't know that the firm registration is broken. I'm not sure that we need to make a whole lot of changes. I liked what you had in the revision of the definition of principal at the end there, Kurt.
There you go. I think we need the flexibility of either an officer of the corporation or a registrant. I think I'm fine with that.
Yep, I think we're good with that. And then I did have a question on 32.141. We're adding a registrant by branch.
Well,
that seems like maybe overreach. I'm not sure what the point is. I mean, we already have a registrant for engineering, surveying, architecture. I don't know. There should be an engineer that's responsible for all of engineering. I don't know that we need a registrant for electrical, another one for civil, another one for mechanical to be responsible for the firm.
I think from the discussion, I think that's what the conclusion was, is that it looks like the only change is to principal, and then basically not do any of the changes for 141. And I actually have a question regarding this change on 28 principal. By making that change out as it is, we right now we don't think we take officer of a corporation, because the 141 currently says they have to be a registrant.
Correct.
So if we don't change 141, I don't think you really need to make this change either.
Well, don't they mean branch by office, right?
Yeah.
In 141?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
It's a branch,
that's what it
branch
said.
Office, not
branch office.
Not branch of registration.
Engineering.
Okay.
Right.
It's hard to
it's not engineering.
Both, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Letter A, would that indicate? I mean, they mentioned branch office in B, but
I'm just wondering if we get rid of the word branch. Seems
it just says firm.
Just firm. Because
right?
I did it branch.
The one that we still like conflict.
I don't really have branch office, but
until you get to C, where it's written in black, which I'm assuming is what it's currently written, says each branch office.
Right, and B does also, but A just
A firm shall not engage in the practice of any board-regulated profession or occupation unless the firm is registered with the board and the professional services are conducted under the full authority and responsible charge of a principal of the firm who is also a registrant. It doesn't leave any room in there. Isn't that a direct conflict with what we're talking about?
Yeah.
So either change the one we were just talking about, or 141, add in there the or, who is a, or you know what I mean? Something's got to change because they're in conflict.
Well, who is an officer of the company or a registrant is what you're trying to say.
The question is, do you want whoever the principal is to be a registrant? And if you don't, if you say no, it doesn't have to be a registrant as long as somebody who's an officer of the corporation, that this change is fine. But if it has to be a registrant, then it needs to change.
Right.
Currently, for the system that we're using, CRM, that would be difficult if it's an officer of the company who's not a registrant, because currently we link them together.
Well, I think we have to be careful, and I'm starting to sound like an attorney, so you stop me, Scott.
Will do.
We don't regulate non-registrants. We regulate professionals. I mean, we can go after someone who's a non-registrant for offering to practice as a registrant, but we don't regulate. So I'm concerned that we're creating a problem if we suddenly bring into the firm registration purview someone who is not a registrant.
I agree. That's why I would like just to flip it right back to where it was initially.
I think so.
Well, am I hearing you say, Julie, that the only way to link it right now is through the registration number,
correct,
of the principal designated?
Well, yeah. I know this.
But what you get happen, though, is, and this happened a long time, like somebody didn't pass, you brought in the person who was the principal, brought him in, and he was a, you know, second-tier architect or something like that, but he was the only registered architect, so he was on the card. Now you're disciplining him, and he is not the one that makes the decisions. That happened quite a few times.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, that was my big criticism for the way it's structured.
I think the discussion that came about back in 2018 was because somebody came in and said that they were a W-9 employee who was the principal.
Mm-hmm.
Contracted. He set the principal, and then that was it. It was nothing tied into the firm whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, they were 1099 employees. They weren't a W-2 employee.
If there's no fire on it, then we can always not have it part of this package, but for a later discussion.
Maybe I'm missing something, but is it not a concern if it's an architectural firm and you have what you just said, a second tier architect, whatever, a brand new registrant or whatever, listed as the principal? So
or home inspector.
Why are they being listed as the principal if they're...
Because the people with the money aren't registered.
Right.
For whatever reason. People running the firm that have the money don't have the RA or PE.
And in the traditional sense of the word, I'm not saying legally, but the traditional sense, when you talk to an architect and you say, and the architect says, I'm the principal of the firm or a principal in the firm, it means they have ownership. Mm-hmm. They're a stockholder, or they're the sole proprietor, or they're in a partnership or an LLC or whatever. But they are someone who has a controlling interest in the company, regardless of its corporate structure. They have some financial interest in the company. That's that's the traditional definition, at least in architecture, of what a principal is.
Well,
and I think that's what we kind of want to say here.
Well, why don't we just say that?
So are you saying it's important to the ownership of the firm is significant? And I'm just asking that because I know in my previous board, we licensed the establishments, and anybody that had greater than 10% or more ownership percentage in had to be reported on the application for the business.
So
there's a lot of firms don't have anyone who's owner of 10%.
Yeah, and I think we have to be careful.
I'm just throwing it out.
My traditional definition of principal notwithstanding, I think we have to be careful tying principal or responsible charge principal to ownership levels, because there's all these ownership models now. We have publicly held companies. We have ESOPs where every employee is a shareholder, and therefore, if we tie it to ownership, you can have that brand new registrant suddenly be your one in responsible, your principal in responsible charge, because they own 2% of the company as an ESOP.
Needs to be part of a firm registration, really, for protection of the public, health, safety, and welfare, all of that lovely rhetoric. What needs to be on the firm registration? What needs to be a part of that? What needs to be accounted for? Who should be responsible? I feel like, again, we're all just kind of uneasy with.
Yeah.
I think it ought to be a registrant with part ownership. I know it's going to open up the door to the new guy coming in with 0.222% ownership, but still, without the ownership being mentioned, you're going to end up with that resident with no authority.
And as I said earlier,
well, you could even get the guy with 0.2%, and his boss is saying, no, we're not going to pay this invoice, and then you bring him in, and then somebody brings the firm in on the thing, and you're going to be sanctioning the guy with the 0.2%, not his boss, the one that's making the decision.
Right.
I don't think this has anything to do with ownership. I think officer of the corporation is the right desirable thing. Because anyone who's an officer of the firm, whether they're owners or not, they are binded by every contract that they sign. And they can bind the whole company. So they have the authority and the responsibility regardless of ownership.
Yeah.
What you're saying is you want not ownership, but rather an officer of the company and a registrant in the definition?
I think it's okay the way it's written right now. For a third, would it be an officer of the corporation?
Yeah, we like that too, but what's going to happen to 141 now?
Well, now when we get there, I guess.
Because that... Because
nothing's changed. That's the original definition there. And it's an individual either is officer of the corporation or is just designated by the firm. They have full authority. And then you go to 141 and it says he has to be a registrant as well.
Yeah.
So either you're just an officer who happens to be a registrant or you're just a registrant who is designated.
So this is the current wording.
And so why did we not? I'm sorry, I might be sick today, but why didn't we just change it to say principal means a registrant who is an officer, as was suggested earlier?
If we do that, then we need to put an or in 32141A, right?
So
registrant
or. I want to caution us, again, I'm going back to how corporations are held these days. I don't know that an architect in a local office of Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill would be an officer of the corporation.
Is there a difference?
And I don't know that Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill would have an officer that was a registrant. They might. I don't know. I think maybe we need to research this more to make sure we're not creating a problem
That's a good point. I mean, are we getting sort of into the weeds?
I don't know if this is our priority
when we do statutes. I haven't seen any issues with firm registration.
I think we're getting in a corn maze.
Yeah.
For another package, another time.
Yeah, I think maybe we don't touch this for now, and we.
Okay, but we do need to come back to it because there are a lot of issues with firm registration, and something's got to be tweaked a little bit.
Would we have any data available on other than failure to register as a firm? Disciplinary actions against firms. Would we be able to query data like that?
We could get that.
I think it would be helpful to find out, how important is firm registration? It may be really important, but other than that...
You can tell me here, but I really think there's not a single case just against a firm. I think it's always connected.
But I would even be kind of interested in that, and then I'm looking for something to evaluate the validity of something like this being in the statutes. I know Mr. Stanley, brought up some really good points, but I'd like to see how prevalent are our enforcement actions against firms, whether it's a standalone or a case that's related to an action against a registrant. Just to kind of see how prevalent is this? Are we creating something that's microscopic on the chart?
On the problem scale.
I just know when I was on the board, it probably happened 3 or 4 times over the course of 6 years.
In 6 years, yeah. I mean, and I recall 1 or 2 times in my 6-year tenure. And so we probably had a couple overlaps there.
Yeah, for sure.
And the question is, if that rep hadn't been available through the board, what would they have done?
We would have sanctioned the principal, who was the second tier.
The
guy on the card who was the registrant.
Yeah, no, but my point, Bob, is if we were in licensing firms, simply didn't have a registration and someone filed a complaint, they would have filed it against the registrant who was in charge of the project, and they would also have gone after them in civil litigation, or they would put them a lien or something. So it's not like we're not the only way to get through that, and I'm thinking the legislature would love to not have firm registration. And frankly, a lot of states don't have it, and they operate okay.
Yep.
Okay, we'll do homework on that.
Yeah, let's do a little homework, but I'm leaning toward getting rid of it myself, just frankly. The number of cases we're seeing, and knowing that we have other avenues to still protect the collaborating design professional, which is typically where that happens.
The only thing with having them go to the court is now it becomes you're going to court for $10,000 or something like that.
They still have the avenue of pursuing the registrant under whose project they were working. If I'm in responsible charge of a project, I do all the invoicing, I make sure that my consultants get paid, and if I decide not to pay a consultant, that's on me, not on my firm.
Well, that doesn't work the same in a lot of other companies. So,
true.
I mean, I'm the project manager, but there's an accountant, and I tell her what the bill, and that goes out that way. And even when I work for big firms, we just submitted our billing and it was handled separately. I've never done anything individually myself, so and I'm sure Dr. Angel doesn't submit invoices either, probably, so.
Yes, we do, but yeah.
I'm sure, yeah.
And, the other thing is, the one thing we do a lot is people forget to register, and the sole practitioners who don't register their firms, and it's just, it seems like we could alleviate a lot of time for the staff and for the board if we didn't have this requirement.
And just for the record, anyway, it does not include alarm businesses. They have their own statutes. And
right.
I would not be opposed to nuking it either.
I just ran it. There's been 16 just on firms only since 2005. And the last one was 2015 December that we got one in.
While I was still on the board.
That was probably with me.
Yeah, we were probably still on the board, Bob.
Yeah, I'm not sure about individuals related to, but like firms only, it's just 16.
16 since 05. Mm-hmm. 17, so one a year, average.
Yeah, one a year.
One a year. That's not compelling, to me, that's not compelling evidence to keep that statute in place.
But well,
so maybe one suggestion is maybe check with, you know, ACEC and the architects as well and see if, you know, because this is to protect other firms. This is not the public at large. This protects more the other firms the way it's been used.
Yeah. That's really the sole use of it, is to protect the collaborating professionals. And I'm not suggesting we take that payment of collaborating professional aspect out of the statutes. I'm saying get rid of firm registration, because I still feel that we have avenues. People with the collaborating professional will still have an avenue to seek board intervention through the registrant of record. If Alejandro does work for me and I don't pay him, he files a complaint against me.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to come to the conclusion to drop firm registration?
Let's do a
committee.
A little more homework.
Do some homework on it.
Yeah, I think that's prudent.
Because you guys sold me, huh?
What's next, Kurt?
Let's see here. I don't think anything changed in 102 from us. Oh, wait. Staff, again, was putting forward that we would want an alarm or controlling person, even though the industry has not stated they wanted it. It's just, if we're going to put home inspectors on there, we want every single group that this we have jurisdiction over to have
representation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got to find that.
Has anybody ever considered splitting the board?
Splitting.
Like having one board that's engineering and survey only, like a lot of other states do? Mm-hmm. I don't know how other states handle their architects and stuff.
It's a mix.
Hole that jumped down.
Yeah, that was, oh man. It's a mix.
What's one and two say up there? Kurt?
Hmm?
What's one and two? Okay, good.
So, but do we, if we're going to parallel our text, do we take registered off of professional engineer?
I think we were talking and...
What are we doing this?
I think that here it was more warranted because we didn't want just any architect or any engineer. We wanted to make sure they were registered with us.
Okay. That's fine.
So, again, the only... main question is, do you want eight? If you do, should you have both alarm and controlling or just controlling?
I think it could be either one.
What's the alarm industry think about being included on the board? Have you talked to them?
I have talked to them. Julie and I attended a conference recently, Arizona Alarm Association. I think they would like a seat at the table, just like everybody else that's regulated by the board. And, it's interesting when you talk to people because they say, well, I don't know anything about architecture or engineering. And I said, yeah, and they don't know anything about alarm agents. And, hey, guess what? Public members don't know anything about any of it. So what difference does it make? You know, you should have a seat at the table. And they're like, you're right, you know. So, you know, six public members right now, and you know, it shouldn't be about me, it should be about everybody else, but when I speak to home inspectors or alarm agents, you know, at their meetings, they're very receptive to that. They're almost just like, wait, can that happen? And I said, well, do you not think that, especially home inspectors, with the percentage of complaints that come through, that are home inspector complaints, that there shouldn't be somebody on the board to respond. You know, I mean, 3% of the licensees and 30% of the complaints. I think there should be a home inspector sitting on the board.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys for taking the heat off the surveyors, by the way.
I've always thought we should have a jail cell for home inspectors.
So, you know,
I have no problems with the way this is made up, Judith. That's Peter speaking.
If you want to argue there should be more of any one thing, I would just say, again, we right now have 6 public members. So, having 2 more professionals that are, you know, regulated by the board put on there, how does that create a negative situation other than the legislature may disagree and want to keep 6 public members? You know, but
and they have to go to the board too, and the board is 6 public members.
Right, right, right. Obviously, they have to go to the board, and they would have to be on board. So yeah.
You're not 3 of them, I just yet. I'm done.
I don't know. It seems like a big swing to go from 6 to 3 public members. Mm-hmm. Just wonder if it's a poison pill for the legislature. And I agree we need to add the home inspector. I'm not sure we need an alarm agent.
But why would we do one and not the other one? Is that just based on the number of complaints or what?
Well, I can add to that. The home inspectors have sat here for 20 years waiting for a position on the board, whereas the alarm people are brand new. Let them sit for their 20 years.
To be transparent about my motives, is I really think the alarm agent should not be with the board, so it, you know, putting someone on their board might perpetuate that situation. But two, I don't think I recall any alarm agent complaint that was technical in nature. They were all about contract issues or registration issues or things like that. You don't need an alarm agent on the board to adjudicate those.
I would say the issue with that is because there's no rules regarding the technical bits. We have nothing, and not having an alarm agent on the board to try to promulgate rules about the technical bits.
Something needs to happen there too. I don't know, Alejandro. If you're regulated by an agency, you should have a seat at the table. And
well, the whole reason for the alarm agent was to just have one place where they would come and all get some kind of certification. I didn't know way back when they were added, that was the whole thing. And because what was happening is Scottsdale had a certification, and somebody else, you know, Mesa had a certification, and Tucson had a certification. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to combine it in one location.
They were all regulated by the municipality.
You needed a state.
So I think, quite frankly, I don't think they need to be on there. But I think home inspectors needs to be there.
Yeah.
And if you want my 2 cents worth, I think we need more engineers, but that's...
And
take what we get this time.
And more architects.
Because you've got... So we can share that opinion when it goes to the board, that if that's the opinion of the committee or if you're split or whatever, you just let us know, and I'm going to share my opinion. And
have it highlighted then.
They can decide.
What's a certified control person?
With so many categories of engineers.
I have no idea how good they do on their own. Certified control
person. They're like
the business owner
of the alarm company.
Oh, okay.
So they're the manager. They're like, they're the principal.
Yeah, yeah. Really, yeah. 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 Yes, that's exactly right.
So they don't necessarily have to be certified then? Or
they are regulated.
They're specifically as a
state. Yeah. We license controlling persons and...
And alarm agents,
mm-hmm. And alarm agents are more representative. And I think if we were going to leave the alarm component on the board, I would limit it to controlling person myself.
Yeah, because those agents will be coming and going all the
they're
time.
Coming and going, and they're the ones
they're on
the one that came before the board. When I was on the board, they were like salesmen, and they were usually getting dinged for. Well, some of them are getting dinged for misleading and
inaccurate.
Inaccurate.
So they're used car salesmen.
So that's why I would rather have someone in a position of authority if they're going to be on the board. I think they tend to be more reliable.
It may help to sell this, Kurt, if we put a four up there with public members also as an option. If you eliminate the either one certified alarm agent, it might be.
Well, that's,
but then we
that's
have
one.
Three
so
or
we're,
four.
Now we're growing the board by another person.
Well, no,
I mean.
Oh, yeah. You're
yeah.
growing it by two.
Because item eight is, well, yeah, we're growing it by eight.
I agreed, two.
We get rid of
we're 11.
I just don't see
no,
how that alarm person would contribute much to the board. Or any more than a public member.
Yeah, I'm like any more or less than a public member. That's what I would ask.
Right, and the bottom line is public members, you know, I don't know, maybe they contribute at different levels, but the purpose of the board is public protection. And we'll probably be reminded of that if we go from 6 to 3.
Yeah.
Like, to make it 4.
I think that the legislature, I mean, it seems like their intent was to, you know, cite North Carolina Dental Board and industry protectionism and things like that, and I would argue, how is that even possible with one almost of all of these things? We are not just the Board of Landscape Architects, and that's,
right.
and we have 9 landscape architects on the board.
Well,
right.
We
wouldn't be fine.
We should change public to 4 because that'll keep us at 11.
But there's 2 engineers.
Oh, 2 engineers.
So,
that's right. I'm sorry. 2
yeah.
engineers. So, no, we do need 3 if we want to keep it at 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say just run with it.
Run with it.
Say no. And the board might, who knows? You know, I don't know. I think,
yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So, yeah. Whatever the committee decides is fine. But for the record, I would not have a alarm person than more public members. It's up to me.
I'll second that.
I heard that.
No, we've got 4 right now. I'm fine either way. But right now we've got 4 members who are saying they would prefer to actually strike
alarm people
and then add another public member back.
So our home inspector committee member wants to strike the alarm guy off?
Yeah. Yeah. They got to do their due diligence first.
and have they asked to be on the board?
Yes, they were very receptive at the alarm convention.
When you offered it.
When I talked to them about it, does this bother you that you don't have a seat at the table, so to speak? And they said,
let's find them another table.
We tried. We have tried.
Yeah.
You know, that's all good to say. They shouldn't be here.
I know.
Else, and everybody loves to say that. But the fact is that they're here. And I really
yes.
don't know that they're going anywhere.
And there was.
I know. I was being bad. My mistake.
So,
as I recall that proposal of going through the legislature.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick and choose who's here. I mean, board staff are just doing the job.
Yeah.
Over here. Okay.
Am I keeping it highlighted or removing it?
Well, the executive director wants them in here.
Well, like I said, you as a committee can say no, you don't want it, and that's fine. I'm still going to voice my opinion at the board meeting, and ultimately they're going to choose. So you're welcome.
But most of the committee doesn't.
Say that you'd rather not be there and stick with 4 public members. I'm happy to share that and my opinion.
So, Judith, as I understand it, you guys are dealing with a lot of alarm issues. Is that right?
I think it's calmed down since.
There's not a ton of alarm complaints. They're just, moderate.
Okay. All right. So it's just because they are regulated that you think that.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I would say that for whatever, if they decided to throw a massage therapist under the board. I mean, stranger things, who knows? I don't know. But I feel like if this is your agency that you should have a
seat. And we used to regulate assayers, and we used to regulate drug lab remediation specialists, and they never had a seat at the board. And assayers were under our purview
forever, since the inception of the board.
That goes way back.
Yep.
That goes way back. And we were down to 6 assayers or something like that, that we were, and there's no way to examine them. It was just like kind of a dying art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess there's precedence to not have certain regulated professions on the board.
And,
I would keep it highlighted just for discussion. Those for the board, and then you can.
I think that's fine. Let's move along and see. We're going to be here till midnight.
No, we're not.
They closed the gate to the parking lot. We've got to get out before that.
It's hard to get out.
We're going to search that.
Yes, I know.
I don't know why there was 2 32-106s in this packet. So please ignore the first 32-106.
That's bad.
I don't know why there were 2 of them, but the first one is not the language that we had from the last meeting. So delete that, and we'll come to it later on when we get to the other one.
I only see 132-106. Is it in somewhere else?
It's a little further down by the firm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay, so now 32-122 is what we're going to go to?
Yeah, this was just something to be a quick fix, because there's the duplicate of it, so might as well just fix it. So I keep them both in statute. So you basically scratch out the assayer bit of this particular one, and then just rescind the other 32-122.
Well, that's old language, because we actually had pulled architect from that a long time ago. And we missed it.
I don't know. They both aren't correct entirely, because the top one doesn't have architect, like it, it seems to have the correct language, but then B is about assayers, so.
Yeah.
Any issues or questions regarding that?
Not really.
Just to this is a lot of highlights. Staff sat down about 32-122 and decided it would be just so much easier for us to take all 5 professions and kind of just put them out in there by themselves. So A is just architect, B is just engineer, C, and that way it's a little less, or easier to understand, but mainly because engineers in branches kind of just ask for that to be its own thing, so it can definitely be talked about. I want Julie, I need her opinion, and give you guys ideas of what kind of comes in to our board as far as applications, so you understand why all this highlighted text is here.
So can we scroll up and start with architects?
We can.
Since that's near and
dear. Wyatt!
So I highlighted in bright green the at least 8 years. Give you a scenario. A candidate for registration now through NCARB with a 5-year NAB degree can complete the AXP in about 2.5 years. And right now, and pass the ARE, become registered in, say, Ohio. Applies to Arizona, sends their NCARB blue cover, and they get a license. They don't have 8 years.
But that's why you had number 2.
So, I understand that. I'm thinking the 8-year requirement complicates things for staff, because what I would rather have this read is 5 years of accredited education or experience and completion of the NCARB AXP, or satisfaction, or however that needs to be worded. Because then what that does is it puts our initial registration candidates on the same par as the reciprocal registration candidate.
And the legislature will like it because it's not as long, it doesn't take as long to be licensed. I'd rather talk, and I think we need to be really agile on this and kind of parallel what's going on in our industry, because there's going to be a time, NCARB is exploring other options for certification, for licensure, things like, I mean, we're just in its infancy, but less and less of this, less and less of what we're going to see is tied to seat time versus competency. You're going to see a lot more discussion and qualifications based around competency in what you're doing rather than seat time. Somebody can sit in a chair and draft for 5 years and still not be competent to be an architect.
And somebody can do it for 25 years and still not be
competent. Exactly. So
you're saying again, Ed, you said,
at least 5 years of accredited education or experience.
Because we have rules that...
Well, or education, we don't have to have accredited in there. 5 years education or experience. So let's talk through... I put my NCARB hat on. 5 years of education or experience plus completion of, however we word that elsewhere in the statutes, plus completion of AXP.
It seems to make it easier.
So
then coming in on comedy.
Wouldn't the only change
comedy
be 8 to 5?
Because
everything else
you said is different. Yeah, but comedy down here on number 3, they require 5 years active practice, not taking into consideration
that. Well, it would be for these 5 years, completion of the AXP and pass the National Architectural Professional
Exam. Completion of the AXP, isn't that part of getting your... Well, that just says...
Well,
so you want him to hold a certificate, not just pass the...
No. Exam. What I want him to do is... Because right now we require that they go through AXP. Mm-hmm. And they have to send a green cover or a buff cover to sit for the exam. It would be a buff cover if they don't have a degree. So... The ultimate goal is they start recording AXP when they graduate from high school. They record 5 years. They qualify to sit for the exam, and then they technically finish AXP with the hours after that, whatever the 3,750 hours. Then they pass the exam and they get licensed. That doesn't guarantee them a certificate because they may not meet the education requirement. But NCARB will still transmit a buff cover to the board. And what it eliminates is let's say somebody goes, oh, I finished AXP. I had someone in my office that this happened. She finished AXP, she quit recording her hours after she got the notice from NCARB, so then she had to file I had to sign an employment verification form for her to fill out the last...
Because if you don't keep it active...
10 months or
whatever.
She couldn't go back and retroactively document that experience because after 6 months you can only get half credit. I'm changing that.
Is there a situation where somebody would have the 8 years without an AXP, was it pre-IDP?
Yeah, IDP was the predecessor. We just changed the name.
Is that by explicitly putting AXP in the statute, does that somehow make it more rigid?
It's already there somewhere.
I don't think we say AXP.
I think we say the
something like
board approved NCARB professional experience requirement.
Okay. We can parallel that language in here. I'm just keeping it simple because it's how it's in my head. But what I'd like
to do
is just tie everything we do here to what NCARB does, because then we've got a level playing field for our
state-to-state
registrants and our initial registrants.
So do we need to say something about experience on number 1? Actively engage in education...
Yeah, I mean, we can do, I mean, when I was evaluating applications, I mean, folks that might have had, you know, they might have a four-year non-accredited degree. They might go to ASU, get a Bachelor of Science in Architecture or Bachelor of Arts in Architecture. They get 4 years of education credit out of that. And then they had to, now they have to work 4 years. Well, now what they have to do is they have to work another year and then do AXP, or and then complete AXP, and then they're done. I would just rather not tie it to 8 years, I'd rather tie it to five plus AXP.
So do you, but it does say experience, but you want the experience listed differently?
This is, yeah, we need to wordsmith this a little bit because it's going to be really confusing to say 5 years experience or education plus AXP plus the exam. I mean, that's really what it is, but the whole is, let's say somebody's a high school graduate and they're going to do the experience only route. It'd be really nice to be able to market this, but get into AXP when you start your career and document up basically 7.5 years or whatever,
right, yeah,
whatever the
number
is. Yeah.
You know what? I hate to jump, but Alejandro, do you have to leave the meeting at 3:30 still?
I do.
Can we jump to
engineering and go back?
Okay,
no,
I'm sorry.
I
remember you said you had to leave.
But Bob is here.
Well, yeah, but...
Yes, I'm here.
But we want you both.
I have to leave at 4, so...
Okay, let's do engineering.
We'd all like to leave at 4.
Can I go past 5?
No.
Okay.
So, engineering.
All the highlighted sections is because of branches.
So Kurt, what Arizona specific professional engineering examination are we talking about?
Geological engineering. There's a state specific, so there's no NCs, and we still register that branch.
Yeah, unless you.
So question begs the question: how many geologic engineering licenses have we granted in the last 15 years?
One we just received.
I know.
Okay. That's a good question. That's
yeah,
good.
How many?
That's good.
How many was that?
I had it.
It was 77.
Less than 100.
There's like 66 active.
One just applied.
We just had one.
Yeah.
So how often do we update our exam?
It's been a long time.
My concern is that I think this provision as written will confuse people, and it'll confuse the thousands of engineers that register every year for the benefit of just a couple that might come up.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a mechanical engineer from Nebraska calling up the board and saying, what state-specific exam do I need to take to sign me up?
Well,
Yeah.
Can we do like an accept or something like that?
Or just add a sentence that says,
geological
engineer applicants shall take and pass the Arizona specific exam.
Yeah.
Just add that text and it makes it clear.
Or scratch out that branch.
Or can we just remove the highlighting? I mean, what's the, and pass the professional engineering examination in the branch designation?
But there isn't a professional.
There's a state one.
I think we wanted to keep national in there because, let's say, for example, California has a specific structural exam that's specific for California. But if
right.
we say national, it's the NCES 16-hour structural
it's
exam.
Geology-specific exam in California.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's the confusion? Just because California has a structural exam?
No, California doesn't have a structural exam anymore. They use the national exam.
Yeah, so we wanted to keep national, but if in keeping national, we wanted to consider our state-specific geological engineering exam as well. And not really.
So why don't we just spell it out, state geological engineering?
Just put a sentence at the end that says, Applicants for geological engineering shall take and pass the Arizona specific exam for that branch.
Or put it in there as Arizona Pacific Geological Exam if applicable.
In lieu of a national exam?
No.
Well, I think what I'm hearing is there is no national exam.
Correct.
That's
for
right.
GMI.
Right.
This is the current stasis of things that we have state specific for that branch, and there is no NCEES exam for that branch.
And so what are we trying to solve with that? With spelling out national, I don't think I understood.
Because there's state-specific exams elsewhere, and we wanted to make sure that it's clear that you have to pass the national exam.
I guess the question I would have is...
What else could they be taking if it's not the national exam?
Yeah, are there states that don't partake in the NCEES discipline exams?
For example, that structural example, they'll take the structural 2 plus the California structural exam, or Western state structural.
Yeah.
But that's not
are those still around? I don't believe they're just using the 16-hour national.
National, and then they have a seismic for civil engineers.
For civil engineers, they have to take a seismic survey.
And a survey exam, yeah. But I guess my point is this a problem? People understand what it means. For people who are getting licensed in Arizona, they know that if we're talking about pass the professional engineering exam, it's the national exam.
But people ask us and people give us that information, so it's not clear.
Right.
Well, and I think what we have to focus on here is we're talking about initial license. This paragraph addresses initial licensure in Arizona.
Right.
So if they're coming from another state, then paragraph 3
would apply.
Or
right?
2 or 3 applies.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've been working for a mechanical engineer and you intend on getting licensed as a mechanical engineer, you're going to take the mechanical engineering exam.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that we need to do that.
There's stuff that can be posted in instructions for the application as opposed to in statute. Not to be in statute, I don't think. Because what if somebody else comes up with a different professional engineering exam at the national level.
So
there's all kinds of national professional certification levels for engineers exams. We need the NCEF exam, and that's what the board uses. Anyway, I'm fine with the way it's rewritten now. I just think
every time we reference national exam, we were intentionally not trying to say the name of the association, but have it be board approved. So that was like a safety net to make sure in case NCWS or ASVAG or whoever, you know, changed there, that it would still be board approved rather than saying the specific acronym. But I really like how that reads.
I think that's fine.
Okay,
was there more for engineers, or?
Highlighted, because we inserted it in the branch designation with registration as SOS.
Oh, right. We did that so it's in line with the rules. We're keeping the branches.
Yeah, last time, the highlighted section...
What do you do on the number 2 if they can't get, a piece of paper that says which exam they passed, but they have a model law designation?
Well, what do we do now?
Currently, it goes before the board.
Before the board.
To review their experience and education.
So I guess with number two, they would give us the model law designation, and then we would just get their all application package. That's how that would work in number two, and they go before the board.
Yeah, my concern is that this may discourage the use of model law. I mean, if someone already has model law, and they just can't get that paper, then what would they do at that point? Would the board say, let's do this section? You need to take the exam again?
You mean because NCWS lost all their exam records? Is that what you mean when you say can't get the paper? Or just...
Well, so that, I mean, what are we trying to solve then, again, on this one?
What I was trying to solve in this one is they come in with a model law record as a professional engineer in another state, and then I want to make sure we're looking at what they took their exam in, because we are branch specific. So they could have been a professional engineer in another state for 10 years, but since we're branch specific, then we have to look at what exam they took to know what branch to license them in.
And that's not in their record?
NC's lost lots of information over the years. Mm-hmm. When they moved to a new system, I think back in 2016, and still, sometimes that's not available.
A lot of times we don't have it. And then there are some branches that we don't have also. That NCWS has exams for that we don't.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think my concern was that without having the highlighted portion in there, could someone come in with a model law record, and even though they took the PE mechanical, say that they want to be civil, because it doesn't specifically say that their exam has to be in the branch that they want.
I guess if you didn't have the branch designation exam information there, if we got the model law designation, we just look at the experience to determine if what branch they're applying for applies.
So we have to do that anyway if they don't have the model law.
Confusing because of the branches, whereas architect is simple, right? They have a blue cover to register you as an architect, but for engineering, it's engineering.
I guess what I want to make sure we don't penalize applicants because NCES lost data.
No,
right?
I don't know.
I mean, what I would do if their application doesn't list what exam they took, it just says they passed the exam, then I would probably verify that their experience is appropriate for the branch that they want to get licensed.
Right,
and that is what we do now.
Yeah, that's what we do.
If I'm hearing my colleagues correctly, that yellow highlighted portion is the problem child, because it's inferring that they have to take an exam, even though they have a model law record.
So should Anne have passed the professional, like past tense instead of Anne?
I think that would fix it.
Have passed the professional engineering exam?
Have passed the professional engineering examination and the branch designation in which registration is sought. How's that?
Yeah.
What do you think, Bob and Alejandro?
Wait, what changed there?
I had them add, and have passed the professional engineering examination in the branch designation in which registration is sought. So if they're coming in, they just need evidence that if they're coming into and applying as a mechanical engineer, they have passed the ME exam.
Instead of
and.
But
the problem precisely is they can't. If NCES lost their record, NCES just know that they took the exam and passed it. They don't know which branch they took.
But if it's because it's a model law cover, I'm assuming they're licensed somewhere else. And most other jurisdictions have the branch designations just like we do.
No, they don't.
That's
the problem.
So that's the problem. Okay.
They come here with just, I'm a professional engineer.
I'm a PE.
Or a PE. And
then we're looking at 17 different...
Right. Okay.
My point is, model law engineers. Really, I mean, there's already enough challenges to be a model law engineer. You have to go to an ABET program. You have to provide very detailed experience. You have to have passed a PE. I'm not sure that we need to add anything more. If we get a model law person, we should just license them. And if we have a question as to which branch to license them on, just verify their experience, but it's in the right category.
It sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, if all of their experience is in mechanical, you're not going to give them a civil.
I mean, considering it's not the initial, so I'm kind of understanding that we don't need the proof of the exam as much as the experience is going to be the more important thing.
The experience is what ends up going before the board most of the time anyway, because they can't show us their exam.
But that's only because of how it's currently structured. I'm just wondering if we just have it as the model law and they choose and we just look at the experience to say yes or no, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay, but if there, I would just say if there's a question on that, somebody's really adamant about wanting a specific branch and the evaluators don't feel like it's, you know, it should go that way, it's going to still need to go to the board.
Certainly.
Yeah.
The board's always the last stop.
But you know what, let's do some legal homework on that one to make sure that
I was going to say, to be honest, I'm not too worried about, you know, as long as the experience is right in their model law, I think yes can provide which branch they took the exam on, great, but if the information is not available, I think we should license them. It's not a big deal. That's like a tiny little hole compared to the gaping hole we have right now. You show 4 years of experience in another branch and you get that license without ever taking an exam. Right?
Mm-hmm. So, that, trying to get a consensus about the yellow ear.
Would we want language about experience?
Yeah, I was going to say, or provide
sufficient
experience to demonstrate knowledge or something like that. Like a or I don't know. Yeah, or something.
The problem is you don't want just an or because you don't want experience but no exam.
I think if you leave it
but
as it stands.
But you're let's think about that one a little bit more. Valid model law designation by National Council.
And let me go back to the top real quick to what the model law is. This is what you have to do to be a model law.
So you pass an exam to be model law. Basically, you pass an exam.
Yeah.
Well, the ABET is a problem too, but yeah.
Yeah, so ABET degree, 4 years of experience, both the FE and the PE exam, and no discipline.
There's no,
leave in there that, you know, to show that you've had the exam in the branch that you're seeking or provide adequate evidence of experience
in the branch
you're seeking. Yeah, something like that.
But isn't that already implied? We're going to check their experience to make sure it matches anyway.
It's not implied. There's nothing in there that says anything about experience in number two.
The model law designation requires, it requires them 4 years of experience in the area of practice.
But again, you got to look at people coming here from the states where it's not specific. And so if we're going to stay specific, we need to make sure we have the ability to collect the information, whether it's the exam in that branch or experience for the branch that they're seeking.
Is that better clarified in rules than statutes?
Statute always trumps rules. It's way better to have it in statute than rule. I mean, that's all I'm saying. If we want to stay specific, branch specific, we need to have the means to make that happen so that we're not just...
Well, wouldn't we look at experience?
Yeah, that's what I just said. Or show... proof of, what do we say?
4 years experience.
4 years experience
in the
branch.
Being sought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or should we say, instead of show, say...
I get what you're saying, Judah. I just want to make sure people don't misinterpret all this. They have a model law and designation, and then they read and they say, oh, I need to do model law and also provide separate certificates of experience or something, when that experience is already shown under model law, booklet thing. I mean, we already can make the decision if that's not an acceptable experience, then we don't license them. Mm-hmm.
Having passed.
Or
and then get rid of show, because you already have provide proof, so get rid of the show proof.
Four years
experience in the branch designation and registration is sought. You can get rid of the or on the end.
Well, or is number three.
Oh, or.
Hold a valid registration in good standing.
Sorry.
Issued by
lots of ors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Territory registry, I think.
Brain getting close.
Which registration is that? Does that go down to the next page? In the most recent 5 years.
Time to take class.
Thank you.
feeling like I had to schedule another meeting to do.
I think the Ethernet might have been messing it up. It was like half.
Oh, so it might have got pulled a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Like from the middle.
All right.
Let's see.
I think your changes are clear, but they're clear. It's so exhausting. I'm so sorry.
No, we're a pain.
It just went through super smooth.
Okay, we're recording again.
All right, we're back in session. I'd like a roll call to verify quorum, please.
Hey, Mr. Marley?
Here.
Mr. Brady?
Here.
Mr. Bartlett?
Here.
Mr. Stanley?
Here.
Dr. Angel? Mr. Fondren?
Dr. Angel did leave. Mr. Fondren's here.
Mr. Leith?
Here.
All right, we have a quorum.
Very good. All right. Any comments on that number three?
Oh, I think Angel and I were okay with that.
Okay.
Staff has a question about the 5 years. Is that
acceptable?
5 years tends to be standard from my experience. And the rationale I've heard, because we've discussed this at NCARB, about why we have like a 3 or a 5 year window in a lot of these alternative paths for the certificate that we have. And it's typically that, at least statistically, I guess, 5 years is kind of that window where if somebody's going to have an enforcement action, it'll probably appear in that first 5 years. And so you've got, you know, there could be discipline on their record. If you have a brand new registrant, there's no disciplinary action that would have been taken from, you know, on them. So I think that's the rationale behind the 5 years. Just to play devil's advocate a little bit, just for point of discussion, and it would apply to any of the branches. If they're good enough to be licensed in another jurisdiction, why aren't they good enough to be licensed here, right out of the chute? If they get a license in New Mexico, New Mexico says you have met the qualifications to be an architect.
Well,
why can't they be licensed there? I'm not saying that's what I want. I'm just putting that out there for discussion.
We do have, you know, universal also, but
yes.
We only have to be licensed for one.
For 1 year.
Yeah, 1 year.
The tricky bit, again, is coming from other states as an engineer here because we're branch specific.
Right.
So, I guess, again, we'd just be looking at
But let's say this one applicant, all the planets align, they've got their model law record, it actually has their exam record in, it shows they took the mechanical engineering exam, everything lines up, and they just got their initial license in Kansas, and they're coming to Arizona, and they want a license.
Well, then they would fall under two.
Okay. That's true. I keep forgetting. We're in the...
Number three is for those who are licensed but don't have the model law.
Don't have the model law.
Yeah.
That's right. I apologize. So
no worries.
I think I'm good with 5.
I like your description about the disciplinary actions and the history and why that's important. That makes sense to me.
So did we go? Do we need to go back to architect? Because we didn't finish architect.
So I think
I do wonder if we add the AFT to number one, what about those who took the exam 20 years ago and where there wasn't AFT required?
Presuming they're not registered anywhere else?
Yeah. Sure. That would include them.
Don't we have a statute that... So we would accept someone who took the exam 20 years ago and passed it but never sought registration?
5 years.
That's scary.
We don't have any, have to kick it in the last 5 years or anything like that.
Did you ever been active?
Only if you're registered with us already, go inactive. That's what you're thinking of. So no.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, what?
I wondered about that too, or experience could have come from 20 years ago.
How often does that happen, though?
It happens.
In 6 plus years of reviewing applications, I've never seen one.
We have surveyors that get their LSIT and then never go beyond that.
Okay, so there are ways to document, and actually it's in the packet, not in the packet, but there's a reference in the packet. It says, are you a U.S. architect without a degree from that? Learn how to apply for certification through the education alternative. So it doesn't, that's for a certificate. That's not
For those without the NCAR record.
We should have addressed this at like 1:30. Now I have to think.
I can highlight it for next time, or we can do some more wordsmithing and then present it to you, or I can email it to you.
What I'm concerned about is I would rather craft something that is more, for lack of a better term, the norm, and then, there's always going to be an outlier. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, the outliers, they exist, but they're pretty rare. And to try to craft a statute that incorporates everything is impossible, in my opinion. And so I'd rather come up with language that fits the norm, and then we can address the outliers on a case-by-case basis. Because I recall a case when I was first on the board, because I reviewed the application of an architect whose registration had lapsed and was canceled, and it was more than 5 years. And the board required him to retake the ARE.
Yeah. So that does happen. That's in statute.
My concern is having somebody who, because it's all about relevancy of current practice and things like that. And my concern is, I took the exam in 1985, something like that, or 86. Having someone who took it in 86 when I took it, huge difference in what we're testing today. Huge difference. And I just, it causes concern, but that's for another day.
I just wonder how often that's going out.
Yeah,
just have to deal with it on a case by case basis.
Yeah. So we need to,
I'm trying to list it out for myself, the three tier that you're trying to go for.
Yeah. So it's education or experience, and that's that 5 year period, and then AXP. And ARE, and it doesn't have to be. AXP and ARE can be concurrent. Once they have 5 years, they qualify and sit for the ARE.
Would the 5 years be separate? So what if someone had 5 years of AXP experience?
That's fine. Well, they need...
And no education.
If they have no education, they need complicated.
Yeah, it is.
5 years of AXP experience. They could document 5 years of experience in AXP, which then is the marker for Arizona to release them to take the ARE.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need to fulfill the actual baseline requirements of the AXP. They need to get basically 7.5 years or 7 years or whatever it comes out to. I don't remember the exact years. They do it now.
Yeah.
So maybe that's, what if we did it this way? What if we, I mean, there's 2,040 working hours in a year, right? So if you did 2080. Thank you. I'm an architect. I rely on engineers and surveyors and geologists. So 2,080 working hours in a year. What if you said you need this many hours of experience or education? Well, can't do that either. Because you can do a combination of education and experience. I'm
just thinking of those not going through in CARB with the hours again. Like they're just
But we have our experience verification forms.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they have to go through NCARB to meet the AXP requirements.
Yes, unless they've taken their exam 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm trying just to focus on the traditional registration candidate that we have. Nine times out of ten, they've either got a combination of education or experience, or they've got a NAV accrediting degree. And so those two plus AXP plus ARE equals registrations. And then we'll have to figure out what we do with
the outliers.
The outliers.
Yep.
And you know what? I'll be seeing Harry Falconer in December. I will talk to him about maybe what are the logistics of this, of somebody who's taken the exam, how can they back document or something? I mean, maybe there's a way to make it happen that I'm not aware of. So what I'm struggling with is how we word this. Because the cleanest thing the cleanest thing for the candidate and for staff is they open an AXP record. If they're just coming out of high school and they're going to work for whatever the duration is, they start at AXP, they log it all, and they get to the end, you know, they get 5 years in, they can take the exam, and they can get it all documented in one. They send you a buff cover, and they're ready to go.
And I think any way you can get that in there without specifically saying numbers or AXP or things like that, but board approved national this or that, you know.
That's fine because that ties it back to AXP. We're not calling it out by name, but we all know what it means. So I'm comfortable with that. But I struggle with documenting that first 5 year piece.
Mm-hmm.
We have experience forms that they could fill out. And maybe it's more we write the statute that it's 5 years plus AXP, and then maybe there's something we put on the website that points them in the direction of documenting everything through AXP if they, you know, they're encouraged to, just because it makes it easier for everybody. Not required. You can't do that. You deal with this on a daily basis. That's why I'm looking at you.
I know. Just trying to think of scenarios that could occur.
Well, like I said, let's craft something that works on the 95% of the cases because they're pretty traditional, and then we'll find a way to solve the other ones.
There is a section F which goes to finding what active engagement.
Isn't that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have comments. That helps. That helps clarify what we're talking about.
Maybe this could be modified to do the things you're asking, rather than having a fun part.
This part's important. I think I'd like to see it in the package that goes to the board, so I want to make sure that something resolved here. I mean, what if we just made it as simple as 5 years of education or experience, completion of a board-approved experience, nationally recognized experience program, and passing of the ARE, the Architect Registration Exam.
So
5 years of education and or experience, completion, and I'm not going to word this right, so you guys can fix it. Completion of a board approved experience program, nationally recognized experience program.
Experience requirement or program.
I would prefer programs because that's.
Program doesn't sound
requirement.
Yeah, you need requirement. Okay, it sounds more
requirement? Okay.
Definitive, you know.
Okay, that's fine.
Like that you like did that. It.
No, that's good. Now that I see it, it means well. and pass the National Architect Registration Exam.
Professional examination?
I would call it, it's called the ARE, it's called the Architect Registration Exam, that's what I would call it. It's kind of in my, as I go through looking at text that parallels what the national organizations are saying, like the fundamentals of engineering, all of that. Work for everybody?
Put an LY, a national, and
a comma or, right?
Well,
national.
Talk to Harry.
I'll talk to Harry and see what, like I said, I'll be back. I have a meeting in D.C. in 2 weeks.
Sure.
Actually, last year was nice.
It was nice.
I'm surprised.
Because we don't.
When's the board meeting?
December 6th. But we, you know what? There's more. I mean, there's more.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to meet again.
Okay. Yeah. We're not gonna get through everything today.
Not even.
So anyway, I think I've beat this to death.
Yeah, probably have to be that actively engaged. I'll have to be plucked in there somehow just so it goes with F.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, we talked about the engineer bits. Geologists, any comments on that? They don't get a number two like the other ones.
Right.
One. Answer there.
Oh, one change was past the national fundamentals of geology. But
I'll make the switches later. Surveying at Arizona State tops, no matter which of the three options, you still have to get state specific.
Okay.
The way this is written, are you on the surveyors?
Yeah. Yes, we are.
as long as we don't take away or make a gray area that's state specific, and then you should be fine.
We actually lead with that.
Yeah.
Right. I see that. So.
Okay. Okay. Landscape architect. Again, we still have 8 highlighted just because Clark has just said they would like to see 6.
Yeah. Carb really wants 6.
Change that to 6?
Yeah. They want 6. With 8 going away.
The only reason it's 8 was all the others were 8.
Right.
And we have a lot of states that don't require 8.
And the model law they're pushing is 6.
Yeah.
So I think that's
so then
like
wouldn't you want to change like geology is with an 8, wouldn't you want to make that 6?
No,
engineers are still 8.
Yeah.
But I have no objection if it's
I know when we went through the law in Idaho, through the legislature, they would only require 1 year.
One.
And Utah, when it went through Utah, it was 2 years.
We were just saying, we got your architects down to 5.
If we changed that to 6, then if they had an accredited lab degree, it would just be 1 year of experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, good.
Because they could get 5 years of education.
Say that louder.
So they had an accredited degree, they would get 5 years for education, and they would only need 1 year of work experience.
Yeah.
With
that 1 year
degree and have to move them and all.
Mm-hmm. For a long time, CLARB was pushing 5 years for degrees, and they moved it back to 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 0 credit degrees, 4 now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can put 6, we've highlighted, explained to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff might not like it. I think he wanted to keep 8.
Uniform, and that's why it was 8, was when we went through the rules before, it was the same as all of the others.
Yeah.
I think the key here is we're going to see it more and more in our regulated professions, that we're going to get away from seat time.
Competency.
It's going to be
competency-based.
And Doug, mm-hmm. I missed what you said about that. Did you say, what are you doing, Kurt?
I changed it to 6 because the geology is at 8 right now.
Oh.
Architects 7.
So would that
work
the same?
The other ones
right.
Would be
engineers are 8.
Engineers are 8. Yeah, but they're engineers. They need 8.
It takes longer.
So,
yeah.
10. So did you hear that? It's not about accreditation, right, with geology, but if you have a master's, then it would be 1 year experience because of the credit you get for your education.
You get 5 years for a master's degree.
Oh, I see.
And then you would only need to show 1 year of work experience.
Right.
I apologize. I was disconnected briefly there.
Oh, hello.
But if you only have a bachelor's degree,
then 2 years.
Two years.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need another 4 years of experience.
Well, if we change it to 6, then it would just be 2 years of work experience.
Are you saying you wanted 6 or are you just... I'm just throwing it out there because everybody's changing the numbers. So. No, I mean, I think 6 years is a good number for an experienced geologist with 6 years experience.
Quite honestly, the more we keep these numbers down a little bit, the more favorable it's going to look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's less
to be real frank about it.
Yeah.
Well, and I, so full transparency, I never made it to the ASVOG conference because I made it as far as Dallas and then my flight got canceled and there was weather and I got stuck there for 15 hours and then I had to come home because it was a one-day meeting and I couldn't get there. So, and so I didn't get to talk about this, but that's, and I emailed again about the definition, but I don't recall, the numbers of years being coming up in conversation like it has been with CLARB a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not opposed to that and taking that to the board to ask.
I mean, if you want, I can call Deanna and talk to her about it.
That would be great. Right. Yeah, I would love that, actually. Okay. And while you're talking to her, say, and what about that model logic? I know that Arizona's already contacted you on that. Engineers and architects are staying where they are. Is that right?
I think they're still.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But we'll figure that. We had to figure the architects out a bit more.
Okay, yeah.
The architects are paid.
Oh, gosh.
Usually you're not, no.
You know, and there are variations, I think, in the engineers depending on the state, too. But I don't know. Let's see what Scott Sales says at the board meeting, maybe.
I don't think there was any changes from last time on
that. So, I had comments on F, which is, you know, formerly known as C. I'm concerned about the addition of the term curriculum. The board typically doesn't approve curriculum. I mean, to me, curriculum is something that falls under the purview of the accreditors. Somebody like NAB.
I think that's what I'm trying to say, though.
I think we added that because we have applicants that say, well, I went to ASU, that's an AVET school, but what's your degree in? Like, that's the degree that we're looking for, not what school you went to.
Okay, so maybe it comes down to what's the definition of curriculum. So when I think of curriculum, I'm thinking of the coursework and all the courses that these folks take, and you know, design 101, 201, 301, 401, versus program.
Yeah, program would be a good word. Yeah.
So maybe it's school and specialty or program or
major,
something like that. Because yeah, I mean, for them to say that they went to the My son graduated from the ASU School of Design or whatever they call it, and he's got a degree in graphics. Well, it's the College of Architecture is in that same, under that same umbrella. Well, he can't come to the board and say, I went to ASU and got a Bachelor of Arts in design. It's design studies. Mm-hmm. Design studies, so yeah, give me credit. Well, I'll give you a couple years, maybe.
Right.
You're not going to get. You're not going to get 4 years. So, I think curriculum's not maybe the right word, but I understand your intent. So now we just need to find a good word. And I think whether it's program or and I'm always.
These schools sometimes use really confusing names for their programs.
They do.
Like, if you get the word sustainable in there, you get more money, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, the College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture, U of A has architecture, landscape architecture, planning, sustainable built environment, development. I mean, they have five programs under that umbrella. Well,
and that's where, you know, if they
apply to this board.
That's where you guys need to, like, you know, understand what that school's program really is. Is it, does it involve real architecture or real geology or real engineering, whatever?
Regardless, just need to do.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's what their value is, get to do now.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Is there any problem with leaving it just the way it's worded? Completed in an architectural, engineering, geological, land surveying, or landscape architectural school approved by the board?
I think they had stricken it because it was separated from land surveying, which used to be the old number two. But I guess, I mean, if you did a land surveying school program and then you're applying to be an engineer, does this say that you get engineering experience because you did this? I just wonder if you just...
Well, I think you clarified, though, each year of study in the profession in which registration is sought and satisfactorily completed in each of the big five,
Because you added in the profession in which registration is thought is why he struck out the profession.
But I'm just...
bringing a lot of conundrums this time around.
Yeah, you're making us think. It's good.
But
you can use the word program in there. Each year, study in the profession of which registration is sought that is satisfactory completed in a program approved by the board. Would that make it easier for you?
It does. I'm going to ask the bigger question. Approved by the board infers that the board has, to me, reading it as an architect, infers that the board took action and approved a particular school of architecture as a program that we would accept experience from. Now, if I live in Portland and I went to Portland State University for 3 years, and I come down here and I move to Arizona and I continue my now I'm on an experience track, because I said those 3 years at Portland State they were great, but I'm done with school, I just want to work. Is Portland State a school and curriculum or program or whatever approved by the board?
The rule specifies the accrediting entities. Basically, that's what's approved by us, is what the entities are.
You have to be careful. Because if I went to UNM, University of New Mexico, a four-year program for 3 years, moved to Arizona, that would, if we're tying it to accreditation, that program would not be approved by the board, and therefore those 3 years of education wouldn't count.
But it's what we do, though, right? Because of the way the rule is, because although it spells out the accredited program, it also says the board shall grant all other education credits according to the following.
But if statute trumps rule, are we making this too restrictive on the board to evaluate out-of-state educational institutions? It's real easy to go, yeah, ASU and U of A, you're approved because you have accredited programs.
Well,
I'm not as immersed in the rules as I used to be, so I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Approved by the board is not new language. It's just added on to the school bit because we wanted, it's not the schools that are accredited, it's the program within the school that's accredited.
Right.
And I think that's all we were trying to do.
And maybe program is the right word, not curriculum.
And we'll just make it up real quick. Because we can't, it's just like the national councils. We can't specifically say ABET, because if that were to disappear, then all of a sudden, you know, we have to have a broader definition of why it's worded like that.
No, I understand that. I'm just, I just want to make sure we're not narrowing stuff down too much with our language.
If you're worried about the terminology approved by the board, maybe it would be better to say and program with board approval, you know? So the board doesn't have to, with board approval, you know? So they don't have to go approve any specific program, they can make a decision on their own.
Approved or acceptable?
Maybe acceptable to the board.
Acceptable to the board, yeah.
Maybe that's better language.
That's a good word.
Scott, what do you think about acceptable? That seems like a good thing. Are we missing anything by saying acceptable instead of approved by? Acceptable to?
Well, I've got to be careful because I can't really recommend statutory language.
Right,
per se, but if you say acceptable to the board, acceptable gives the board maximum flexibility as opposed to tying yourselves down by saying if they take X, Y, and Z,
perfect,
then the board no longer has flexibility to actually accommodate somebody if a program changes or if they have some other qualification that would be beneficial that can't otherwise be considered. So I think acceptable is generally a more flexible term.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. Yep, that's great.
Well, certainly.
Well, he hasn't slapped me through the phone yet, so this is okay.
Nope, you are all behaving very well from a legal standpoint.
Good. Sometimes it's hard.
So I always get slapped up. The number two concerns me a little bit in its wording on that. Does that mean that 1 year of teaching or 2 years of teaching or 3 years of teaching is all equivalent to just 1 year?
You're reading it correctly.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. So are we good on the tentative language on one to go to acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I did it to both of them.
I would love to hear my engineering colleagues weigh in on this, and I think it's going to be different than an architect's opinion on number two. 1 or more year of teaching, subjects in the profession in a school, and a program or acceptable to the board is equivalent to 1 year of active engagement. I find that troubling.
Because you think they should have more credit?
No.
Oh.
I don't think they should have credit for that.
Oh.
Teaching is not equivalent to practice.
Hmm.
So maybe 5 years or more.
Okay. There are teachers that
take it out?
I would take it out, in my opinion.
The term, those who can't do teach, it did not just come out of midair.
It did not come out of midair.
I don't think that would harm.
I'm going to go back to when, I'm going to go way back in history to when I was a student. Probably 80% of my professors were licensed architects, and had, if they weren't practicing while they were teaching, they had practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, it's hard to find. You don't find a lot of registered architects teaching in colleges.
You'll find the same with landscape architecture,
all of the professions.
Yep.
And I think it's problematic for accreditation because they're looking for that.
It's problematic for accreditation. It's problematic just because the what they're teaching and what the professions need.
But they have held it down to 1 year, regardless of how long.
No, it says 1 or more years.
No, but I mean,
that's only equal to 1 year.
But the equivalent is only 1 year.
Regardless of how many years.
So either you pull it all the way out.
More years of actual work.
But it says that it's equivalent to 1 year of active engagement. It doesn't have a limit. As I read it, doesn't have a limit on you. If you taught for 5 years, wouldn't that be equivalent to 5 years?
No.
No, 1 year.
One? Okay.
No, it's...
I'm not reading it quite that way, but okay. I believe you.
Why
would strike
it?
What do my engineering and land surveyor colleagues say?
From the survey perspective right now, for the schools, a lot of our professors are licensed surveyors. Whether they're actively practicing or not, I couldn't tell you. But I've read that kind of thing as that it's kind of like on the surveying exam, you know, you can have 10 years of construction staking, but you only get a year of credit for it, and that's how I read that. So, I mean, we have those
subprofessional construction, those are limited regardless of how many years that you have, and that's on the little form. So I see it that way.
Okay. I'm not going to die on this hill. If we want to leave it in, that's fine.
I'm indifferent. I mean, Julie said it rarely comes up. I don't think that it would be creating harm by not having it there. I guess the optics of it, what does that look like? It would be nice to know, I don't know, if any of the associations were strongly opposed to it or something. I never want to tick them off.
Like I said, I'm not willing to die on this hill. We can leave it in. Just change the wording to reflect what we reworded.
Do you want to highlight it? And then
I'm afraid if we take it out, then an evaluator could give them more than a year to someone for teaching. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave that door open.
I evaluated a landscape architect that had taught at University of Melbourne, was educated in here in the United States, went to Melbourne, and was really insulted that I didn't give them credit for a number of years that they had been teaching in Melbourne.
So, all right, maybe better to leave it
in. Okay, we'll leave it in.
I would encourage these professors to get registered.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's
give them a little
that's
bit
a
of
good
a
point. Yeah. So they get a little perk.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Okay. Sold. I like that.
Should it say no more than 1 year? Because Ed was reading that wrong earlier.
And if I read it wrong, everybody else would read it correctly.
Oh, okay. Well, then I
we highlighted onto H the two-thirds. Just curious, it should just be a majority vote.
I don't know why the architect was different from all of the others, Ed, but I feel like it should just be a majority vote.
Majority vote. The board may allow an applicant to meet the requirements of subsection D. I would let's go back and look at the AXP requirements and just make sure. I mean, there are limitations on experience under another registrant. I just don't recall what they are. Under a related, you know, like working for an engineer or something like that, right? Because I'm tying it back to the paragraph above. It says up to 1 year's experience may be obtained under the direct supervision of a professional who is satisfactory to the board and registered in another profession regulated under this chapter in this state, another state, or a foreign country.
Yeah. So currently, they can obtain 1 year under a different profession.
Age is like a
non-registrant. They can get experience under a non-registrant.
So what I'd like to do is just make sure we're not creating an opening that conflicts with the requirements of AXP that then puts someone's certificate at risk.
Well, it's been in there, right? It's just by a different size boat.
Yes,
for architect.
Okay. Well, we're taking out the exception for the architect. I want to make sure that we need to leave the exception in there, because my thought is there's something embedded in AXP that maybe says we can't, the board can't do that. I don't know. I'm trying to read between the lines and figure out why that would have been like that. Somebody asked for it sometime.
Yeah.
So I think that's something we just need a little further research on.
I apologize. I've got to leave.
Okay.
But you guys are welcome to continue on for another half hour if you want.
I need to leave also.
Okay.
Well, we've lost Mr. Stanley.
Yeah, I think one more. We'll lose quorum.
Pick another.
Pick a new date.
A new date. Yeah. Because I really want to want this committee to go over some of those expansion policy statements.
Yes.
We desperately need review.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go here.
December 25th.
Absolutely not.
It'll be a short meeting.
If you want to meet in December, the 14th looks good. That's a Wednesday.
I could do Wednesday in the afternoon.
I hate starting so late, though. Look how fast that time went. There was conflict.
You know what? I could do as early as 11. I could start at 11.
I have an EAC in December. I think it's
I've
on the 13th. You have that on your calendar?
HI-22038.
What's the name of it?
I
better hold that one. That's like right at the end of the project. You're supposed to be done that day, so I better show up. The high maintenance
time. Eric?
That's on the
Wednesday 11th.
Tuesday the 13th.
Just go on.
December.
Yeah.
Leroy, does that work, Doug?
What was the time again?
11 a.m. on the Wednesday, December 14th.
Okay.
Yeah. What was that? I was just asking for it.
You do it.
No, I can do it. You do it.
I'm sorry, what time was that again?
11 a.m. on the 14th.
And you want to go how long?
I think we should just order pizza and work through
the next day.
Yeah. And then I'll get breakfast burritos.
Bring your sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Or at least say no to that. Scott, are you available on the 14th at 11 a.m.?
I actually don't have access to my calendar at the moment, but regardless of my availability, I would definitely move forward with the committee. Do keep in mind it's going to be a hard stop time of 5 p.m. Because I believe, don't the doors to the building lock at that point? This is a public meeting. You would hard stop time at 5. But
yeah,
I don't think that'll make anybody very sad.
Yeah, nobody wants to stay at 5.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Especially us southern dwellers.
Oh, yep. Definitely don't want to.
I'm going to have to catch a flight that day later in the afternoon, so I'm not going to be able to stay.
Bring your bag. You want to ride to the airport?
I'm good with the 14th.
I'll take
and
you
I'm
to
good
the airport.
Here a little bit longer. But.
If you get here. You're good, Mike.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else on the line that I can ask?
No.
Okay,
Stanley
just send it to all of them.
That way.
Okay, fantastic.
I would say until then we stand adjourned. Thank you all. Appreciate your input.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, Scott.
And may you have luck on I-10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so
Mr. ADOT.
Figure it out for me.